Okay.
So I will see how that works with unemployment.
Right.
I'm not really sure how it covers that and whether I'm eligible for the extra $600 because I worked. I don't know.
Dance, monkey, dance.
And welcome to this week's episode of Dance Monkey Dance. I'm Chris.
I'm John.
How are you doing, John?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, just dandy. How's life in quarantine?
Well, I ventured out this week.
Yeah.
Went fairly well.
Yeah.
Went to a restaurant with a group of people for lunch.
Uh-huh.
And didn't get sick. Not sure what the incubation period is, but seems okay.
Did you wear a mask?
Well, not while I was eating.
Well, no, but I mean, would you wear a mask out, though?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, always. Of course. Of course. And then I went to run some errands. And I went by this one strip mall kind of, you know, Target, JCPenney, Best Buy kind of thing.
Yeah.
Thinking that it was kind of out a little bit out in the boonies, so maybe it wouldn't be, you know, too many people.
Yeah.
Holy shit. There were hundreds of people on the sidewalks, no masks, hanging out in groups, mostly like teen and 20 year olds. And I'm like, yeah, I really don't need anything that bad here. So turned around, got some Chinese food, went home.
Nice.
And then I went out yesterday, and it was much better experience. Made it to the comic book store.
Nice.
Thank God.
Priorities.
Thank God. Yeah, there were like seven people in the store, so that was good. And yeah, it's very odd still.
So let me tell you about my experience. I went this morning, so today is Sunday, and I went out first thing in the morning thinking that there wouldn't be a lot of people out.
Yeah.
And I had to go to Home Depot and Walmart. And I can count on two hands how many people I saw wearing masks. Me being one of them.
Okay.
So I went to Home Depot. There was one worker that was wearing a mask there.
Mm-hmm.
And she was all the way down on the end at the pro counter, where it's Sunday morning, nobody's working, so she was down there by herself wearing the mask, and I was like, I'm happy you're wearing a mask, but like, whatever. So then I went to Walmart. And Walmart on a Sunday morning was way more crowded than I wanted it to be.
Okay.
And I was wearing a mask, and I walked past these people, and I made eye contact and nodded my head, and they weren't wearing masks. And this woman wearing a big gold cross on her necklace
right.
rolled her eyes. And I don't know why, but as I passed her, I said, "Is there a problem?" And she said, "You know, you don't need to wear that anymore." And I said, "What?" And she goes, "The mask." And I said, "How do you know that I don't work in a hospital? How do you know that my wife isn't a doctor that's working with COVID-19 patients? How do you know I'm not protecting you?" And she goes, "Well, it looks silly and you shouldn't do it." And I looked at her and I said, "Well, fuck you if you don't like it." And I turned around and I walked away. But I was like, what the fuck, man?
It's not going to get better. We have become such a society of assholes that, you know, it's I have the right to carry a gun if I need to protect myself, but I don't have to wear a mask because God will protect me.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
Or like the South Carolina is a very Republican state, and I've heard mm-hmm. people say, well, the president said we're okay. And it's right. like, oh God, if you're listening to him and you're taking your medical advice from a dude that's self-medicating with stuff that's been proven not to work.
Right.
Like what hope is there for the people in this country?
There's none. There's absolutely none.
Hmm.
There's footage down here. They've opened Daytona Beach for the weekend. And there were people just randomly stopping traffic and gathering crowds in the middle of the street in front of the beach. One of them, and they had police footage from the helicopters. One of them was some African-American gentleman in a car with a sunroof.
Yeah.
Making it rain.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And there are a bunch of, you know, hoochie mamas trying to get $1 bills.
I will say that in South Carolina, if the person is wearing a mask, you've got a good shot of them being African American or Hispanic.
Really? Now down here it's opposite.
It's the middle class white religious people who think yeah. that they're fucking immune.
Let them die. That's all there is to it.
I mean,
now that's, let them die.
That is my thought, is let them get it and let them get it sick. And I should say that the woman that said something to me today was older than I am and yeah. is probably in a higher risk group. And I was like, I could only hope that somebody coughs on you.
That's horrible. That's horrible that we've come to this.
I don't understand, man. I really don't.
Nope. Sad. Sad, sad, sad.
You just want to punch these people in the face.
You do. You do. It's, yeah, what's the solution? You know, I mean, I don't understand why we can't fix the problem with our leadership. That there's not somebody with enough money and a democratic slant to them that can sponsor whoever the fuck needs to be sponsored to get in there and get rid of McConnell and Getz and the whole fucking bunch of them and just be done with it. I mean, I was so hoping that when Jackass showed up at the Ford plant and refused to wear his mask, they said, you know what? You're not welcome here. Go away.
Yeah, but unfortunately.
You know, but we're not going to do that.
No.
But I mean, what's he really going to do? Is he going to call out, you know, the National Guard to help get him into the Ford plant for a photo op?
Well, and I loved when he said that he didn't want to be photographed in the mask for the media to show, and then pictures showed up of him in the mask.
Right.
And it's like,
and he had like an extra mask that he was passing out. Here, yeah. take it.
Yeah, because somebody wants to breathe in a mask that he's breathed in.
He didn't wear that mask.
You don't
Plain
think so?
And simple. No, not at all. And I don't think he's taking hydroxychloroquine either.
Oh, I kind of think he is.
Really?
I think because he bought stock in the company.
Well, that's why. I think he's just saying he's doing it.
I did like there was a woman who, and I guess that is prescribed for people with lupus.
Yeah.
And she takes it every
day. And malaria.
And got COVID-19. She's like, so how is this a protection?
Right.
But, you know, he doesn't, that's fake news. That's not.
Of course not.
Oh, fuck these people. Oh, makes me angry.
Yes.
Well, okay.
You're right there?
Yes. We need to change the subject because I don't need my blood pressure spiking. So
I was just going to say, is your blood starting to boil?
Yes. So last week we were complaining that there was nothing going on in movies and TV and the stuff that we normally talk about. And then this week, like, the fucking floodgates opened and all kinds of shit happened.
That's right. Yes.
So the first thing that happened last week was that Ruby Rose has decided not to come back to Batwoman next year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, depends on who you read. Some people say she left. Some people say they asked her to leave.
Right.
I don't know for sure because, you know, it was...
You weren't there?
That's right. It was a very...
Did you call her?
No.
Oh, no, why not?
Because I didn't know if she'd want to talk to anybody about it.
Oh, whatever. Some journalist you are.
I know. I'm sorry. So she basically has stepped away and thanked everybody. And I guess the CW has said that they are going to recast the role.
Okay.
With another... actor from the LGBT community.
Okay.
Which, I mean, at this point, maybe you should just deal with a good actor and not so much the politics of it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just my opinion. It's always when they try to do the politically correct thing that it always kind of bites them in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
So, it'll be interesting to see who they come up with, and I'm assuming they won't call attention to it, that it'll just be another actor.
It'll be like Becky on Roseanne.
Yeah.
Or Darren on Bewitched.
Or they have what's...
Or she gets in an accident and they redo her face.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. You make it a plot point.
That's right.
Alice saves her life and gives her a new face.
Oh, see, there you go.
She's now half black, half Chinese. With a huge mole on her forehead.
There you go. So, that, I mean, that could be a good plot point because Alice is doing that in the show.
Mm-hmm.
So, did you watch the entire season of Batwoman?
I did.
Did you feel like the show got better as it went or got worse as it went? Like, what was your opinion of it?
I think they're trying very hard to make Alice the Joker.
Okay.
And I don't necessarily feel that it succeeded.
Okay.
I think that they were trying to do the same thing that they did with Penguin on Gotham.
Right.
And it's just, it's not working. And I think a big part of that is I really didn't give a shit about any of the characters. I don't feel anything for Kate.
Okay.
Or any of her girlfriends or Luke Fox or the sister or any of them. And I never really liked Ruby Rose. I just felt that she was cold and unapproachable and not human, I guess, or not emotional.
Okay.
So maybe they have the opportunity to correct these things. I don't know. You know, they were doing trying to make it very much part of the... Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
Part of the Batman universe, and you know, they brought in another villainous very quickly, who's kind of a rival to Alice. Her character is the Joker's daughter, but she's really Harvey Dent's daughter, Duella.
Okay.
And didn't go anywhere. And then this season they have Hush, and that's really not gone anywhere. And next season, you're going to have a villain with Batman's face.
So I saw this.
It's like, do they know what they're doing?
I saw this the clip of the final scene where they reveal that Hush now looks like Bruce Wayne, which is
right
straight out of the comic books.
Yep.
And I think it's interesting that they basically have given you an idea of what Bruce Wayne looks like and what that could mean for the show of bringing mm-hmm. in that actor to be Batman, and then Batman shows up on Batwoman, and then you don't really have to have Batwoman anymore.
So by season three, we just have Batwoman with the woe crossed out of the logo?
It's just the Bat.
The Bat. Okay.
So, I mean, it is an interesting idea. I think I kind of feel like the actor for the Hush Bruce Wayne guy is too young.
Okay.
Because in the crossover on Crisis on Infinite Earths, when Batwoman meets the older Bruce Wayne, she recognizes him. She literally right. is like, Bruce?
Right.
So basically he should look like Kevin Conroy.
I was just going to say, but he doesn't.
But he doesn't. He looks like a young, almost like John Hamm looking dude.
Right. But Alice has no reference of the crossover.
Right, but I guess unless the crisis reset everything and now Bruce Wayne is younger. Which, God, what a mess that is. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be this hard. No. That's all I'm saying.
No, but that's what they like, though. They like to make it yeah. harder than it needs to be.
Well, they think they're reinventing something or they're creating this new mythos, and it doesn't work. So let's get over it.
Yeah.
You know, your job is to entertain me. So get on with it.
Yeah.
And yeah. Yeah, I just don't feel anything for any of the characters.
I mean, that was one of the reasons when I stopped watching was just because I didn't connect with the story, and it was I sat there and I looked at it and I was like, this is nothing that I'm gonna want to watch on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, it's very much a main character who you don't care about,
right,
and who doesn't act like they give a shit about being there,
right.
So, yeah.
And that's a hard sell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, I'm interested to see who they cast and what they do with it. Maybe it'll make more people tune in, because that was one of their issues, was that nobody was tuning in for I guess the finale had, like, half of the audience that the rest of the season had.
Sure.
So, good luck, I guess. I mean, not every show has to work.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Things can fail.
Yeah. Yep. But I guess in their minds, it can't.
Well.
They could always replace it with that Canary show.
Do you think people are going to watch that at this point?
No. I don't think
I mean, I kind of feel like they've kind of tapped themselves out.
Yeah.
So, you know, how you either cut bait or you figure out how to fix it. And I don't know that they have any clue as to how to fix it.
They don't.
No.
But it does give a good opportunity for them going into the second season, knowing that they have a new actress and knowing that they weren't connecting with viewers to right. kind of course correct.
Sure. Do you think part of that not connecting was her being a lesbian?
No. I mean,
okay.
there are gay characters in other superhero shows. I don't think the audience that they're going for is not as uptight as the boomers or anybody that would have a real issue with it.
Sure.
I think it more ends up being like, if that's just what it's about,
mm-hmm.
then you lose sight of the comic book character.
Sure.
I mean, Batwoman is an established entity in the comic books, and they need to be able to translate that into the TV show.
Sure.
And I've never read the comic books, so I don't know if Alice is a creation of the TV show or whether it was in the comic books.
Well, in the comic books, she was the sister of Jervis Tetch, who was Mad Hatter.
Okay.
So I don't know if she appeared as a different version of Alice in the Batwoman universe, because I never read Batwoman or Batmite or the Bat Family or all those.
Right.
CSI Gotham City.
Just read Crypto, the Superman's dog?
No.
No?
No. I'm not a big Superman fan.
Well, there's initial problems with Superman.
Oh, of course.
You can't have a character that can't be defeated.
Well, he can be defeated if you know the secrets.
Yeah, but 99% of the villains he's going up against is not an issue for him.
Right. That's why there's always Lex.
Yeah, exactly. Except for the Supergirl Lex. Then you have another one, dude.
Should they just rename it 2.5 Superheroes?
Yeah, there you go. Bring in Charlie Sheen.
There you go. Or Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah.
Ashton Kutcher is Brainiac.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, there was other big news in the superhero universe this week.
Yeah, so on Wednesday... It was either Wednesday or Thursday on the social media platform Vero. I don't know if you've ever been on Vero. They had a watch party with Zack Snyder, and Zack Snyder is like one of the founding members of Vero. And they did a watch party of Man of Steel.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, Henry Cavill showed up to take part in the Q&A that happened afterwards. And one of the questions undoubtedly turned to, when are you releasing the Snyder Cut? And Zach basically said, hey, guess what? We're actually doing it. And it was announced that HBO Max next year will be premiering some version of his version of Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
And he's being given between $20 and $30 million by Warner Brothers to finish his visual effects. And from what he has let out is that it's a 4-hour cut and that they're probably going to turn it into like they're calling it a maxi series. Which I thought was weird.
Nope.
But
okay.
So like a 6-part, which I don't know how that breaks down with 4 hours, but
yeah, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, you would think they would do 4 1-hour.
That's like 40 blocks. Minutes a piece or something. Yeah. Okay.
Well, so one of the weird things that was coming out with this was people were saying, well, why would Warner Brothers do that? Why would they now say, here's some money? And basically, when all the shit happened with Zach and his daughter committing suicide, there was a different group of executives at Warner Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons that the Justice League was cut down to 2 hours and made to be released before the end of that year was because they were on their way out and they needed to get their bonuses. So they rushed the production with Joss Whedon and reshot what Zach is saying is about 75%
right.
of his movie, and rushed it into theaters under 2 hours, which is why it's the big mess that it is.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently in the beginning of the year, Zach, who had a version, which everybody thought he had, and people kept saying, yes, I've seen it. And he kept kind of coyly saying, yes, it's there, showed a cut of it to the current Warner Brothers executives, and they were kind of blown away by it. And as the release, the Snyder Cut, whatever call to action that everybody was doing, where
right.
people were renting planes and they were bombarding Warner Brothers with the release, the Snyder Cut thing happened, they kind of sat up and took notice and said, well, okay. And this was right around the time when the COVID-19 thing really started. And mm-hmm. knowing that they were going to have to push it back and things were going to get pushed anyway, they saw it as an opportunity to make some money, hopefully next year with the launch of HBO Max. And being that HBO Max is an American website, not available to people outside, they will end up taking this and somehow showing it or selling it into other markets to get their money back. Because
okay.
they already made a shitload of money off of the Justice League movie. So I
right.
feel like with $30 million, they could be like, well, we can make that back and probably more with video on demand and all that other shit. You know, if they're doing $20 a pop with it.
Right.
You know, they could probably make that back fairly quickly.
Well, I mean, look at how much money the Trolls movie made without even a you know, national theater release.
Yep.
It's like, we're in a new world, people. You better rethink what you're doing because it's changing.
Yeah, and people are very concerned. Like, AMC's filing for bankruptcy, and people are basically thinking that the idea of movie theaters is going away. So they're
sure
they're going to have to do something coming up to make up for all that stuff.
Right.
So Justice League, does it say what their worldwide made $657 million
mm-hmm.
in its tenure at the box office, which by a lot of standards, you know, people think is a flop, but it isn't. That's a whole lot of fucking money. It made $229 million in its opening weekend. Or is that gross for total? It made $93 million its opening weekend.
Right.
So it's made its money back. Well, to everybody else but the, you know, Warner Brothers. So $30 million to finish the special effects is probably not going to be a huge deal.
And it may pay off for them.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because Zach has now basically said one of the big criticisms for Justice League was Steppenwolf.
Yep.
Steppenwolf was a product of Warner Brothers saying that the original was too scary and they wanted to lighten it up for kids.
Mm-hmm.
So his original Steppenwolf design's coming back. Darkseid's going to be in it. He's already released pictures of the dude that will end up being the Atom.
Right.
So, and you saw Man of Steel, right?
Yep.
So the black military guy that's like in charge of everything.
Uh-huh.
Zach has always said that he is Martian Manhunter.
Oh, okay.
And he has said that there is Martian Manhunter footage that they shot for Justice League. So all of these things are going to be placed back into this version. And I really think that this could be the Justice League movie that everybody wanted. It'll be fascinating to see what actually was Joss Whedon's
vision,
contribution.
Not Josh. Oh, his contribution. Yeah.
To this, and not so much what, you know, what they had to go back and fix.
Sure.
There was a couple of shots. I don't know if you saw the HBO Max video that they released when they announced it.
I did not.
But there are several scenes of a black-suited Superman. So I'm kind of interested to see where they go with that.
Hmm. Okay. I mean, I'm looking forward to it.
Yep.
That's all I can say at this point.
So they also announced this week that we're getting a new Muppet TV show.
Yes, that's kind of a surprise.
And it's coming fairly soon, right? Like July?
Yes.
So it was announced that Disney Plus is getting a Muppets
reality type show is how they're billing it.
Is that what they're calling
it? It's unscripted.
Ooh, is that a good idea?
Yes. it needs a script.
Yeah.
They tried to do the fake reality show version on ABC several years ago, and it just didn't go anywhere. I mean, plus it had Miss Piggy and Kermit broken up, and that just, you know, didn't work.
It's a fascinating idea to bring them back. I mean, it's an IP that isn't used enough, for sure. And Disney's kind of sat on it for a long time.
Well, and Disney had announced that there was a Muppet show in development for Disney Plus, but then it was canceled.
And now there
was that the who was involved with that?
I don't know. You mean?
It was called Muppets Live Another Day.
Okay.
Allegedly, that was already been in production, but then it was scrapped. Yeah, it doesn't say much else.
So this new show called Muppets Now, which will launch on July 31st, is a spontaneous lunacy, surprising guest stars, and more frogs, pigs, bears, and whatevers than legally allowed. And we'll kick off with a 6-episode first season following Scooter navigating whatever obstacles, distractions, and complications the rest of the Muppets gang throws at him while he tries to launch their first streaming show.
Sure. Oh, it was being developed by Josh Gad.
Oh, okay.
And it was supposed to take place right after Muppets Take Manhattan.
Oh. I don't see that working either.
It was going to be a 6-part series. So it wasn't, you know, it's the new version of what a series is.
Well, Disney Plus, well, all the streaming services have really kind of leaned into short seasons.
Right.
Which is good. I mean, everybody hates filler episodes. You know?
Until there's nothing on TV and you wish there was something to see.
Well, yeah. I do feel like Disney is trying a lot of different things on Disney Plus. Some of it works and some of it not so much.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like in this time of change and stuff, they can at least see it for what it is and know that, okay, that we have this IP that we can now put on a streaming service and not, it's not a huge risk. Because there's no numbers. Nobody knows how much money they're spending to create these. The there's no advertising on the end of it, of like having to have advertisers and all that shit. So I kind of feel like they're more out to take risks this way. And maybe that's a good thing.
Sure.
I hope that Brian Henson is at least involved in this to some degree.
Right.
I mean, he is the visionary after his father passed away, and he's done some amazing things in his career. And
right.
I hope that they can keep that going.
Yeah, definitely.
Because Disney Plus should be where, like, not really Netflix for, like, Dark Crystal and, you know, some of those types of things.
Sure.
Weren't they going to do a Labyrinth TV show at one point for Disney Plus?
Don't know.
Was that a thing?
Don't know.
Labyrinth Disney Plus. I could have sworn. Maybe not. Maybe that was a fever dream or something.
Right.
Oh, they were going to do a Willow series. That's what that was.
Oh, and okay. They still are, apparently.
Yeah. If anybody's ever allowed to shoot again.
Yeah.
So did you catch up on the Mandalorian?
I did.
Okay.
I did. I want to live in the volume.
Yes. Isn't that one of the coolest things ever?
That is fantastic. And it's interesting because I watched a lot of Star Wars these last few days.
Okay.
Started rewatching Clone Wars. I'm into season 2 now. I watched an old documentary called Empire of Dreams.
Right.
And then I watched the brand new documentary, The Skywalker Saga, and looking at the difference between how they filmed Mandalorian and how they filmed the 9 features, it is just mind-blowing. Just mind-blowing that they had all of these physical sets built for, you know, Rise of Skywalker, and yet Mandalorian is in a, you know, empty aircraft hangar, for lack of a better word.
Right.
And what they accomplished is just amazing.
I mean, you really have to give it to Jon Favreau. In the last one where they were talking about the technology, it really became apparent that he was the driving force behind this technology when they made hello, Thunder.
Hey, there you go.
When they were making Jungle Book and then Lion King, where he was like, "Can we push this?"
Right.
And he was the one to look into the video game engine and being like, why can't we do this? Why can't you make something look photorealistic through the camera when it's not there?
Mm-hmm.
And all those cool shots of them moving the camera in the volume, and you see the background shift and you get the parallax that you should be getting because the camera is hooked up to the virtual set and it knows where the background should be to get the parallax that it needs.
Right.
And
right.
That is just so cool. Okay. They have a cockpit for the Razor Crest.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to put it on the volume and they're going to put them in space and they're not going to have to green screen everything. What they get in the camera is what you're going to see. And they talked about like editing on the day and then being like, hey, we need to go back and reshoot a couple of shots that we need, and then just loading it back up. They're not tearing down sets. They're not, oh, we can't get that because we don't have access to that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's all this like cutting edge, what George Lucas was trying to do from the very beginning.
Right.
And it doesn't surprise me that he hangs out on that set because it's exactly what he always wanted.
It's what he wanted to build at Lucasfilm in Marin County.
Yep.
He wanted a virtual reality set.
Yep.
And, well, at least his legacy has it.
Yeah, and that's why I feel like he's way more involved than what they're letting on.
Yeah.
Whether they're paying him for his time or not, he's there giving advice and direction, and Filoni and Favreau are the two guys that will listen no matter what. And he has his say in Star Wars again. For whatever, sure. You know, however deeply he's going to get involved. But it's fascinating. And the one before that where they were talking about the actors. Did you catch the story about Pedro Pascal getting hurt?
Yes.
So apparently they were going to shoot the scene where the helmet gets taken off. So he had blood and fake blood and all the stuff all over his face. And then on the way from costume to the set, he wasn't paying attention where he was going and walked into a piece of plywood and basically like didn't break his nose, but he split the skin over his nose.
Right.
And apparently was all bloody, and they took him to the emergency room covered in fake blood.
Right.
With a real wound on his face. And there are some shots where they tried to like hide it and stuff. But I thought that was fascinating that there was an actual injury that happened because he wasn't paying attention.
Right. I mean, this last episode was just incredible.
Yeah.
And how they're, you know, using light as part of the video package so that it responds properly to the live actors is just amazing.
Yep.
You know, you're getting backlit scenes of this shiny armor that you never could do in real life. It would just take, you know, too much time. And now it's just, you know, okay, plug it in. Here we go.
Well, and one of the things that's really nice from a standpoint of visual effects is that you don't have to worry, like they were saying, you don't have to worry about them lighting it wrong or being rushed later on because they have to be involved from the beginning.
Right.
All that stuff has to be built inside the engine before that they can shoot with it. So you have to make all those decisions ahead of time.
Right.
Before you even get on the set. And then they can say, okay, this is where we need to go with this.
Mm-hmm.
And they can rearrange it in the volume as they need it. But,
right.
You know, you can get a shot of the Razor Crest landing into a bay and somebody walking up towards it all in one shot in camera and not have to go in the post-production with it. And that's just blows my mind that we're there.
Right.
And they're absolutely right. Like if you were to shoot somebody in front of a green screen in the Mandalorian outfit, the Beskar version, you would have to go in and roto out any green spill after you pulled your key. And then you would have to then add any kind of reflection back into the helmet.
Right.
And that was always the thing before they really showed how they did this. That was always the thing that I liked was seeing the light spill and all the stuff that's on him when he's in the cockpit and they're flying or whatever. And I was always like, okay, that's really cool that they're able to do that. And I've seen the front screen projection stuff. They did it in Solo for the Millennium Falcon when it's going in the hyperspace. And the problem I always had with Solo is that it's way dark. I always felt like when you look at the cockpits that were shot for the first three movies and then you look at Solo's way dark because they used all practical lighting.
Right.
And in all the other movies, they shot it like an actual set. And but you weren't getting light leaks and light interaction with those actors in the original. Even when they were turned around, there wasn't, you could tell it was a green screen or a blue screen.
Sure.
And in this, they can put anything they want in front of this volume and it's photorealistic. I do think that moving forward, it's going to be the wave of the future.
Oh, yeah.
I think it then becomes, how big of a volume can you have? But, I mean, I guess that that begs the question, how big of a volume do you actually need?
Right.
Because if you can make something look like a desert and you only have to build one little piece of it.
Right.
You know, how big of a hangar do you actually need?
Right. Well, and that's what struck me about Skywalker Saga, because they went to these real locations. They, you know, just like in Empire, they went to the fjords of Norway. Well, for this one, they, you know, they went into the desert to film these huge expanses. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, a couple of years later, and you can do all that in camera.
Right.
And with, you know, a backlit video screen. It's like, that's just incredible how fast that technology is running around.
Well, you, one of the things that they have said is that you have to have a lot of that stuff is actual footage from a desert.
Sure.
And they went out and they filmed
you
a
don't
bunch
have,
of stuff.
But you don't have to take 450 extras and your wardrobe department and your catering and, you know, all of those people. You take a dozen people.
Yep. Yep.
And you get your footage and there you go.
And then that gets enhanced later on. But, like, just knowing that they didn't go and shoot in a forest for the episode where they're on the planet where they meet Cara Dune.
Yep.
That literally is just the volume. And, you know, in the actor one, they were talking about, no, it might have been the technology one, where they were talking about, like, they're standing in the boat and everything's moving.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not.
Right.
And they get disoriented because everything looks like it's moving, but you know, you feel like you're going to fall over because it's so convincing.
Right, right. Yeah, it was Gina Carino who made the comment that, like, she sometimes gets seasick and or motion sick.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a fascinating technology for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and the really messed up part of it is, like, the Unreal Engine that they're using is absolutely free.
Yeah,
it's open source
engine.
Software that you can download right now onto your PC and build video games with.
Right.
And I remember seeing that when they first created like a small volume as a proof of concept, and it wasn't Favreau, it was the people, was it from AMD? Maybe it was the Unreal people. And they showed them filming a TV commercial with it. And it was a motorcycle commercial. And the dude gets on the motorcycle and they go from, like, morning to night as he's getting on. And the camera's moving and there's parallax, and seeing that, I was like, holy shit. Like, that just blows everything away that I've ever seen. And then when it came out that the Mandalorian was using it, and that they had one backlot set and no interiors, and everything that was an interior was on that volume.
Right.
Because looking at the footage, you would be like, oh, they built the set of the client, the Werner Herzog character, where he first gets the job. And but no, they're in the they show, like, people calling that up, and there's only a little door frame that they've built. And you're like, holy shit, like, anything is possible now. It's almost the jump from pre-Jurassic Park to post-Jurassic Park. it's almost that big of a deal.
Sure.
That now you can do anything in camera and not have a lengthy post-production process on the other end. Now it's all on the front. But the fact that they can take anything in that and like move it around too. Oh, this isn't quite right in the right place, so we're going to move this over here. And okay, give us 10 minutes and we can change that.
Right. It's like, oh, you know, I think it would be better if we had a higher camera angle. It's like, okay, just, you know.
Yeah, just do it.
Let's fix it. Let's fix it. Let's make it work. Amazing.
That is crazy.
Yep. Is that rain?
Yes.
Wow. I'd like some rain like that.
Would you?
I would. It's been very dry.
It doesn't help me trying to build to redo the deck on the back of the house when it rains like this.
Oh well.
So
maybe God doesn't want another deck.
Oh, whatever. That would make me have to believe in God, and we all know where I stand on that.
Anyway,
yeah.
So yeah, it yeah. Yay, Star Wars.
So there was did you see the article? We're gonna switch gears a little bit about the Netflix version of Back to the Future, Part 2.
Yes. Yes. So, very similar to what they did with Splash on Disney Plus.
So, okay. So there was a discovery where in Part 2, Biff hides the sports almanac within the dust cover of a lingerie book called Ooh La La. And there is a scene in the movie where Michael J. Fox gets the book back and he's flipping through it and he starts to see women in lingerie and he starts saying, ooh la la, ooh la la. And it was discovered that there's a scene missing on Netflix. And there's a side-by-side where that chunk where you see the women in lingerie have been taken out of the film. And there was kind of like a big uproar on the internet about it. And people are saying, you know, it's censorship and where's that going to stop? And are they just going to cut parts out of movies now because they feel like people can't handle it? And apparently Bob Gale has stepped in, who is one of the original writers of Back to the Future and 2 and 3. And he basically said that is a version that was made for a overseas distribution where they were asked to remove that because whatever country it was going to air in, it was too risque for that audience.
Okay.
And that he felt that Universal gave Netflix the wrong version. And that they were going to try to correct that.
Okay.
That it wasn't something that Netflix did, that Netflix has no real control over that these companies hand their files over to Netflix and Netflix just puts them on the platform. So it may not have been Netflix's fault, even though they're getting kind of hammered with it.
Sure.
So I'm kind of interested.
Well, that's interesting.
To see if that gets corrected.
Right.
Yeah, it wasn't like a digital butt hair or whatever they did for Splash. Which was really bad. I mean, I've seen some bad visual effects work, but that was bad.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it might not have been their fault.
Oh, well, there you go.
So is the Skywalker saga what's the word I'm looking for? Documentary. Is that on Disney Plus?
Yes.
It is? Okay.
You have to go to Rise of Skywalker and then click on extras.
Okay. Is it like 2 hours long?
And then it's the... Yes.
Hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
It was very, very interesting.
In what regard?
Just the whole process. The death of Carrie Fisher. Okay. And it shows how they got the story to fit in with what they had already filmed from episode 7.
Right.
It showed how they did like a rough storyboard of how her scenes would then fit into the new storyline. Just very cool stuff.
Okay.
It showed how they were talking about the wreck of the Death Star, and how when they like started to look at the reality of it, you know, the Death Star is like 90 miles wide, that there was no way that it conveniently would have fallen on top of this planet. So they were talking about, they took the original drawings from the first, from 4, 5, and 6 to figure out how much of the Death Star would feasibly have fallen into that location, because they wanted it to be identifiable. And it's just very cool.
Do they explain the Goonies thing?
The Goonies thing?
The fact,
you mean the octopus?
No. The fact that they just happen to be standing in the right place to line up with the stupid dagger thing?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, they talk about building that prop and figuring out how to have that prop have more meaning to it than it just being a dagger, that it was actually a map of some sort.
Okay.
It shows JJ looking at a bunch of different prop concepts, and he's like, you know, this isn't working. It's good to see these things, because then when we know what it is, we can identify it. But, you know, there was something that looked like a Star Wars version of like the Torah, you know, like a rolled up scroll type thing.
Okay.
So that was kind of cool. And it goes into the whole John Williams cameo, which I thought was neat.
Oh, how they had all the little pieces of stuff to represent his career.
To represent his career for such a tiny, tiny cameo.
Yeah, if you're not even paying attention to who's standing there, you could totally miss him.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They showed some footage of Babu Frick. I didn't realize that the woman who does the voice, Shirley Henderson, who is Moaning Myrtle in Harry Potter, is actually puppeteering the mouth.
Oh, really?
And they asked, you know, one of the puppet leads, it's like, you know, did that woman have puppeteering experience? And he's like, no, we've never done anything like that before.
Huh.
They also showed a lot of I love behind-the-scenes footage.
Mm-hmm.
And they had so much footage of BB-8 and the green screen rig for it. It basically looks like, have you ever seen, or maybe you've even done this, when people like are putting down pavers or whatever, you can rent like this big rolling pin kind of thing that you push across your yard. Okay. It's basically that kind of thing. It's the, you know, the big ball is attached to this yoke. Okay. And then there's another arm that comes off of the yoke that's got the headpiece. And they're just kind of pushing it around like a Dyson vacuum cleaner. And it's like, okay, that's really cool. Wow. It was very interesting to see how the first trilogy was made and then the last movie. Okay. And that last movie was so much... Whoever had the idea that it was going to be goodbye.
Right.
We were going to wrap this up. We were going to bring back certain people who were, you know, who you're familiar with from the past and give them a chance to wrap up their stories, you know, 40 years later.
Okay.
And, yeah, it was a little sad.
Yeah,
I mean, from where it started to where it's ended. It's like, it was a really nice arc.
Okay.
Because I know you don't like that movie.
Which one? The
Skywalker. Well, any of the last three.
Well, I liked Force Awakens.
Okay.
One of the reasons why I never watched this making of documentary was because I had seen parts of the one for The Last Skywalker, and it was all Rian Johnson sucking his own dick and like, look at what we're doing here. And knowing that I hated that movie, I was just like, I don't really care about the behind the scenes stuff, but I love like seeing that stuff. I've watched the making of episode one, which is like one of the first in-depth ones they did that goes from start to finish. I've watched that one every couple months, and there's always something new in there that I catch of the way that they're creating that movie and how it's a new beginning for Star Wars of all the digital stuff. So I always have a fascination with behind the scenes stuff, but I'm not the biggest fan of the Rise of Skywalker, but if it's more than that,
yeah,
then it does fascinate me of how they come up with the props and watching directors work through the idea of the props. So I may have to give that one a look-see.
Yeah, it's only 2 hours. It's not overly long. Really interesting sequence of the cavalry on the Star Destroyer, you know, when they're like riding horses out in outer space.
Right.
And how that it was basically a 300-foot section of the Star Destroyer that they built, and how it looked like, you know, it was miles long. It was massive. Of course, once again, proving you can be in outer space and not need any kind of breathing apparatus.
But were they really in space? They were in the atmosphere, though, weren't they?
Were they still? I thought they were just outside the atmosphere.
They were trying.
Wouldn't the air still be a little thin up there?
Oh, probably. Probably. But I mean, Rise of Skywalker also has that shot where Finn and the other Janna, is that her name?
Yeah.
The other chick are on the falling Star Destroyer, and the Millennium Falcon like zips over and picks them up.
They show that sequence behind the scenes.
Like, you, there's a lot of suspension of disbelief.
Of course there is.
That you have to kind of, like, really be like, okay.
But isn't that what the movies are all about? Do you really think Vin Diesel jumps a car between two skyscrapers?
No, but there's...
Do you really think there are dinosaurs on this island that's become a tourist trap?
Well...
No, you don't. You might like to. Yeah, but no. And the other thing about this is the woman who was the stunt supervisor was badass.
Okay.
It's just really cool to watch her work because she's watching a sequence in the monitors. Her body is making all the same movements as the actor.
Oh, okay.
And very cool. And there's the stuff that just I never really thought of, and things that were really the actors doing these stunts as opposed to doubles. Okay. It's like Daisy Ridley was amazingly agile.
Well, I think they basically said that her, like, because she got, like, way into the training stuff. And I think she basically was like, I want it to be my face. Like, you need to be able to see me.
and the stunt coordinator is talking about her first encounter with Adam Driver, and he basically shows up and says, "Yeah, I do all my own stunts," and she's like, "Okay, well, you can do them, but if they don't look good, we're gonna bring in a stuntman." He's like, "No, I do all my own stunts," and he was very cocky about it. And she's like, "And he did every one of his own stunts."
Wow. Yeah, good for him.
Yeah. A very good way to waste some time.
Okay, I'll have to check that out. All right, you got anything else for this week?
No, I think this is a good spot.
Okay. All right, well, if you want to get in touch with us, you can always send us an email at info@dancemonkeypodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. Let us know you're listening. So until next week, this is Chris.
This is John.
Have a good week.
Wear your damn mask.